Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's a Throwback Thursday today, and we're going back to 1984. Today, on this date in 1984, Miami Vice debuted on NBC, so we're doing something fun today. But also this weekend, Oklahoma and Nebraska are playing, and they're playing a game that has been they have not played since 2010. Nebraska going on to the Big Ten, and Oklahoma staying in the Big 12. And these were classic college football rivals. But it's also the 50th anniversary, I should say, of one of the greatest games of all time. Now, it happened in November of 1971, but it's been 50 years, and it's still the greatest game in college football. It's been voted the greatest game of all time. And it was a 35-31 win by Nebraska over Oklahoma, a 1-versus-2 matchup that still resonates today. Now, one of the reasons I like doing this show, and I try to mix this show up with what's going on in the news, with you know some pop culture and just having some fun with some different things, but I also like going back in time. I like reliving some of the greatest moments in sports because I think it connects us in a way, even if you're not familiar with a particular event. I always think that knowing these sort of moments in sports is why sports is so important to our culture. It's the one thing that we sort of share in a different way. You know, we're divided in so many different ways, but sports can bring communities together. Now, 50 years ago, this game that occurred, for those who remember it, it's still one of those games that the atmosphere of the game is so different than today. We're almost kind of built in that big games will draw big numbers. But back in the day before cable, and there's three TVs on your television, this game between Nebraska and Oklahoma 50 years ago in 1971 drew 55 million people. That's as much as an AFC or NFC championship game today to watch college kids play football. And one of the better moments of the game, which was an incredible punt return, is still remembered in Nebraska today. The radio call is still remembered to this day, where Johnny Rogers returned a punt for Nebraska. It is still, people in Nebraska know that call 50 years later. Because, again, sports just does that to us. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Speaking of something that brings us together. We'll have that for you. Plus, we'll talk to Jerry Palm about this weekend's college games, including Oklahoma, Nebraska, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb on this Throwback Thursday. Let's get things started with the good of the day.
Well, you know, it's a Thursday, so I'm going to go with the double good of the day.
Yeah, nice. Why not?
The first good of the day, got to think back to, remember the Euro final that happened over
Italy
the summer?
Italy and England.
Italy versus England. Well, I got to give the good of the day to these English parents because their 16-year-old went to the Euro final without them knowing with a bunch of his friends.
Uh-oh.
Right? Now, usually that's calls for grounding, maybe taking away the family roadster.
Sure.
A bunch of different things. But instead, what they decided to do, because the kid never came clean, his birthday came up, and somehow, some way, they were able to track down a photo. Because this photo was used on the BBC network. They got in touch with the photographer, asked him for a the negative for it or
a copy
of it,
yeah,
and blew it up and framed it and gave it to him as his birthday present.
That's amazing. So he didn't know they knew.
He had no clue they knew until he is opening up the present. And when I say a photo, I'm talking they went poster size on this.
That's great.
It's a gigantic photo, which, you know, obviously you can tell maybe they were mad, but now he has a great souvenir.
He does. You're right.
A great keepsake story. Of a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, and a great story is when he's older and his parents are elderly, they'll sit around and laugh about this and have a good laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're doing it now. I don't know.
Maybe they're doing it now.
But I mean, it's a huge. I mean, it's like a 20x40.
This is like when Ferris Bueller caught the baseball
yes.
at the Cubs game and it was on TV, but
it's
his
exactly
dad didn't
that.
See it.
His dad didn't see it because he looked away for that split
second.
That's
right.
But now, take it to this. If that had made the nightly news and they saw it, they never confronted him on it.
Yeah.
And then went ahead and got a picture of him catching the ball and framed it into a gigantic, 20 by 40 poster.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great for them.
That's a great thing for the man cave.
Absolutely.
I just love that's why I got to get that creative with
great
my kids.
Great story. All right, what's the second good?
The second good of the day, and we're going to ignore maybe the bad part of it, but Christian Yelich bought 10,000 tickets for the upcoming series against the Cardinals that starts Monday. And is giving them away to all Brewers fans for free.
Wow. The fact that there were 10,000 tickets available for him to buy is pretty amazing.
Yeah, we're going to ignore that part. A team that is playoff bound is still having trouble. Because, we know other stadiums that have trouble selling tickets.
His old team, the Marlins, they'd have 30,000 tickets available.
He wouldn't be able to swing that.
If he was still there and he was like, can I get 10,000? They're like, buy 10,000, get 30,000 for free.
Right.
Yeah, he'd be able to swing it. But a team that's in first place and heading to the postseason, the fact that there was 10,000 for him to buy is pretty credible. I mean, if they're sold, they're sold. You can't create more seats because a player wants 10,000 tickets.
Yeah.
So... that's great.
Because his main thing, too, he didn't want Cardinals fans to snatch him up. So
no, absolutely not. Good for him.
They're still fighting for a playoff spot, even though I think they're in cruise control.
These guys are very rich, but that's still a good chunk of change, right? I mean, how much are Brewers tickets?
I mean, you got to figure, say if they're like $10 a pop, right?
Right, that's $100,000.
Yeah, that's cheap seats.
Right. So they're $30 a pop. He's $300,000 he spent.
Yeah.
That's a good little chunk of change.
I know.
Did he get an employee discount?
Yeah, exactly. He couldn't just go to the ticket lady and say, I need a couple tickets. How many? 10,000 or so.
10,000?
Now, does he write a check, or does he say, just take it out of my paycheck?
That's a good idea. She probably asked him if he wanted in installments. Now, for the next 10 paychecks, we could take $3,000 a check for the balance of these tickets.
I mean, you're here. You're not going to go anywhere for the next, 2-3 years, right?
Did he go to just an average salesperson within the organization and made her quota or his
exactly.
quota?
Yeah.
Like, hey, how you doing there, Susan? Hi, Christian, how are you? Yeah, can I buy some tickets off you? You sure can. How many do you need? 10,000? Yeah, she's filling out the order.
Yeah.
Done.
Getting commission on this one?
Getting commission. I can't wait. That's great. That's awesome.
Honey, I'm taking you to Applebee's.
That's right. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day I'm going to got to throw towards Portland State head coach Bruce Barnum.
Oh, Bruce Barnum, Portland State. What did he
do? Yeah. Well, he promised everyone that he'll buy all the beer if they show up for the game this week.
He said he would buy all the beer for the fans that show up to a game at Portland State.
Just head over to the beer garden, I guess, and say, I heard Barney on the BFT.
Is he crazy?
Okay, let's take a step back because I don't know their attendance record as of late. I don't know if they're hurting for people to actually show up. Is it just, moms and dads and neighbors showing up to the game and that's it? Or, I don't know. I don't think he has Christian Yelich money.
I don't think so either. And that could get really expensive quickly. Is everybody getting a voucher when they walk in for one beer or something?
I hope so. Because, he did say all the beer.
Well, yeah. All the beer means all the beer. It doesn't mean some beer and one per person beer. It means all the beer. So basically, he if he's smart, he went to the concessions and said, on your busiest day, how much beer do you sell? This place is slammed, standing room only. What's the most money you guys ever made in beer? And if I can afford that, maybe I'll dive in and see what happens. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, a great promo, but this is one that could backfire. He might need the installment plan.
God, I don't even buy drinks when I go out with my friends.
No, and typically if you're going to do something like that, you say, hey, first round's on me.
Right.
Everyone, round of beers.
Yeah, see,
drinks
my problem,
are on me for the
my
first
friends
round.
Go, yeah, we'll get beers. And everybody wants shots? Shots? Everybody doing shots, right? He's buying.
Yep.
Double shots? What's the most expensive alcohol you have? I'll buy all the beer. All right, well.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes
for
him.
I'm definitely curious about the follow-up.
I mean, I don't know their attendance policy. Like, I went to a small school. We probably would average maybe, 2,000 people for the football
game. Yeah, that's a good, I don't know what Portland, it's not 90,000.
No, in fact, my school used to play them until they got rid of football.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, I really don't know what their attendance policy, but for this, if I got what it is, hey, you want to go see a football game this weekend?
Right.
Let's go, Saturday.
Crazy. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
I'm highlighting the store Target, but it's really all these stores. Because Target has already started their advertising, and they just came out with a promotion or just a quick one-off that said, Christmas is here.
Whew, that's a little early.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, if you walk through some of your local stores, you are already starting to see the change. And
can we just do Halloween first for just 2 seconds?
I thought Halloween was too early.
Me too.
And yet I get it. Hey, we all know Christmas is, the commercialism around Christmas is insane. But
yeah.
God, it feels like every single year it's getting, they're not even going to take down the Christmas aisle in grocery stores. They're just going to leave it up.
I just want some breathing room with Halloween.
Yeah.
Look, this is my problem.
We're already done with Halloween. Did you know that?
I think we are. You're right. This is my problem, and I say this every fall, and you guys know because you guys are with us. This is the time of year that goes by so fast.
Yes.
And I feel like I have to be careful. I don't want it to go by so fast. I love the fall. I like the burr months. I like the autumn coming in. I like football. I like these holidays that come, these major holidays that come boom, boom, boom down the line. I mean, I want to enjoy it. I don't want to get to January 3rd as quickly as possible.
Right. I mean, listen, here in Houston, it's hot, right? It's just god-awful hot all summer long. I'm starting to feel the change. This morning, and I get it, I got in my car. I'm like, you know what? It's actually, there's a little chill in the air. It's not much. It's just enough. I mean, it was like the low 70s. I'm like, this is something different. There's no humidity. I want to savor this for as long as humanly possible before we get to January 3rd and now we're already starting to look like, oh, well, summer's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Turn that heat up. Oof. So.
But here's the thing. I know, again, I get it. Retailers want to capitalize on Christmas, and I understand. But Christmas is one of the only holidays we have that gets its own pregame show.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we don't usually do, there's no, when Valentine's Day comes, people don't go, hey, it's the Valentine's Day season.
Right.
We go, it's Valentine's Day. Whoops. Boom. St. Patrick's Day season, 4th of July. We don't have those. But Christmas, the second we get to Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving's over, it's the Christmas season and it lasts a month.
I mean, come on.
It's the
Black
only holiday
Friday,
that gets a whole month.
They literally start the very next day because what's Black Friday all about?
Yeah.
Getting your Christmas list done on Black Friday so that way you get all the deals.
My wife, we have to start decorating the second Thanksgiving is over because she wants to capitalize on the mood of Christmas. And I'm always like, can we just wait till? But I always help because I understand what she's getting at.
Yeah.
Don't extend it into, I don't want to.
Yeah. We're already in September.
We're already in September. We can't even enjoy Halloween.
If you go to Target, Christmas is here.
That's right. That's right.
And other stores too.
All right. Jerry Palm's coming up from CBS Sports. We'll talk some college football on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
On Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
All right, 1984, Miami Vice made its debut. We're doing TV dramas of the 80s. Was this Remington Steele?
No.
Which one? What is this?
This is MacGyver.
Oh, it was MacGyver. That was another cool premise of a show.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
I watched religiously.
He had bubblegum and a toothpick, and he somehow made a weapon.
And duct tape.
And duct tape.
Always duct tape.
He really knew what. Yeah, it was great. MacGyver was a good show. Now, that was really a good show.
I've always heard this. I don't know if I think that's factual, that they always left one little component out.
Oh, really?
Especially when he was making bombs from a paperclip.
Oh yeah, yeah. So they didn't want people going, I can make bombs with stuff in my house.
Yeah, they always just left like one key ingredient, one key, you know, thing to make sure you couldn't do it at home.
That show wouldn't survive Reddit.
Oh my god!
Like if that show was on now, it would be like, yeah, use corn canola oil. Just add canola, blow up your house. Like,
you want the actual
great.
Ingredient list? Yeah. This is what you use. 2/3 canola oil. You need a paper clip, but you know, bend it in this direction, in this way, and that's how you get it.
That's exactly what would happen to MacGyver.
You need 3 inches of duct tape.
Once the fans knew that they could make a bomb missing one ingredient, they'd find that ingredient and share it with the world.
Because somebody just kept trying and trying and trying.
What a brilliant show, though, that was. That was kind of fun. They'd always use science.
Yeah.
Right? The bubblegum has this in it, and it forms a seal when it's acted with this
acid.
One
of the ones I'll never forget, because like I said, man, I watch this show religiously, and I've always wanted to try it, but I'm afraid I would ruin a car. But there was one where he was trying to get away, but the car had gotten shot up, and there was holes in the radiator, so it wasn't holding any water. And so he said, well, turn the car on. It started, the water started heating up, and he dropped eggs in there. Like, just started cracking open eggs and putting in the radiator. And that provided enough of a seal to the holes that they were able to drive away.
Who was on the research team of that show that knew that kind of stuff?
That's another great question.
Yeah. Like, who came up with that every week? You know, the writer's room is probably one of the most stressful environments in all of entertainment, writing TV shows.
I mean,
they had to come up with this every week. They had to be like, all right, what did you come up with? Well, if you take this, this, and this, you can make this. All right, let's put it somehow in the show. That's crazy.
I mean, they must have, like, engineers and scientists on staff.
Yeah, exactly.
Had to.
By the way, when you need auto parts, like we were just talking about, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day.
They might have better sealants than eggs for your radiator if you have a hole in
it. I think they do. I don't think you need to roll with the eggs.
But I've always wanted to try it.
That's great. They used eggs. I know. God, that's fantastic. That is really cool.
And I loved how he always explained it, too.
Yeah, he did. As if he was on a TV show.
Yeah. As if he was the narrator.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly. So we got Jerry Palm coming up in 10 minutes. We're going to talk some college football with him. So a couple of good matches. I mentioned earlier, for more of a nostalgic sake, Oklahoma-Nebraska. Nebraska's not very good.
I don't know if it's going to be a good game. But
so I don't think it's going to be the game of the century.
But, you know, the pregame should be fun, right?
Right. They should go back into all of the sort of the great Oklahoma-Nebraska moments over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a pretty unbelievable rivalry back in the day. They've also got Alabama at Florida this weekend. Making their first trip to Gainesville since 2011. You've got Auburn against Penn State, which I think is going to be great. I honest to God, I think it's going to be great. And I know Auburn has played two cupcake games in which they've averaged 61 points. And I know, look, you can't take anything out. Like, you can't say, like, oh, Auburn's offense is on all cylinders because they rolled over Akron and Alabama State easy games.
What's their average point total?
61 points per game, right?
I don't know if that's happening.
Yeah, so you can't be like, oh, look at them. They're cruising. But you get two games, and the quarterback has got a rhythm. He knows what he's doing with certain plays. Obviously, it's going to be tougher with Penn State, who played Wisconsin to open up the season, of all teams, in Wisconsin. So this should be a really good one. And as I said this earlier this week, I think, look, we always have fun. If you're an SEC guy, you say you got the best football in the world. Other conferences love to take their shots at the SEC. I'm telling you, it's Auburn. I know it. It's not Alabama. It's not Georgia. It's not even Florida. Auburn is ranked 22nd. They are a good team. But if Penn State, who should win this game at home, wins this game, they're going to feel like they upset a team, even though it's not that way. Because of the dominance of the SEC. People in Happy Valley are going to be ecstatic if Penn State beats Auburn even though, again, everything should indicate that they will anyway, because Auburn carries with it the flag of the conference that has bragged how good it is at football for decades and decades and decades. And that's just sort of the cool thing about college football. Right? Now, look, can Vanderbilt do that? No, they can't, right? Vanderbilt can't do that. Even some of the lower-end schools, like, you know, South Carolina does not do that. They don't bring the SEC swagger with them when they go on the road to play a non-conference opponent. Kentucky doesn't really do that either. But Auburn could. Auburn could. You know, that's a team that's had a lot of good history. It's played well in the past. They've got a good quarterback in Bo Nix. They've got a good running back in Tank Bigsby. They definitely can do that. But that's the nature of collegiate athletics down the road. I'm curious about this Florida game, not only because my son goes to school there, because he's been saying all week, I've been asking him, like, hey, are you excited about this game? And he's like, yeah, but we're going to get killed. And I said, let me just give you a little advice. It doesn't matter. These games are still cool to go to. Like, yeah, it's on all likelihood Alabama's going to win. But don't look at it as going to this game to see Florida lose. Go because the atmosphere is going to be electric. Go because the pregame festivities are going to make you feel like you're at something important. That's what it is, right? I've been to plenty of South Carolina games where I knew they were going to lose, but the atmosphere was great. The unknown was fantastic. And I said, and I gave him my advice as a South Carolina Gamecock, because South Carolina, and I've kind of alluded to this multiple times, South Carolina would be in games where they would be close. Spurrier especially had this knack for doing this, where they would be playing a top-ranked Florida team, or, you know, a better team like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, who they beat. And over time, you would go, oh, God, this game is close. But then you'd look at the clock and you're like, there's too much time. There's too much time. Like, we can't do this forever. We're stopping them on third down. We're forcing punts. We got a turnover. We're scoring. And in some cases, there would be too much time. I remember going to a South Carolina-Florida game in Columbia when Tebow was the quarterback of the Gators, and South Carolina had the ball at their own goal line, near their own goal line, going into the fourth quarter with the lead. But they turned the ball over, and Florida took two plays to go 80 yards for a touchdown. And it was that moment you went, oh, God, it's too much time. They played Alabama one year, and I remember just sitting on the edge of my seat forever going, please, please pull this off. Like, please pull this off. And they did. They did pull it off. They did upset Alabama. And it was one of the greatest games in my fandom. So I was telling my son, I'm like, there's going to be moments where Florida is going to play well. They might lead. They might have a lead at halftime. They might be doing some things right. Hang in there and just pray the clock is your friend. Because when it isn't, it stinks. It really stinks. When you have that lead and you just watch it, bye-bye, see you later, towards the end of the game, it really stinks. I remember Florida, South Carolina was playing Florida one year. This is the year Florida won the national championship in 2006. And I was at an Air Force game, and I couldn't watch it. So I was doing some stuff for Air Force. And I was game casting it. Have you ever done that game cast where they show you like where the ball is and they give you the play?
Yeah.
That was the best way I could watch this game. The problem is it's on a massive delay. And South Carolina was going for the game-winning field goal over Florida, high-ranked Florida team. South Carolina had no business being in this game, but they were. And they were lining up for the game-winning field goal. And I was watching it on my game cast to get an update. And my wife called, and the first thing she said was, it's blocked. And I was like, oh, I guess it's blocked. I guess we lose. And I was on the edge of my seat, like in the press box, watching Air Force play. I think it was playing Notre Dame. I was watching Air Force Notre Dame and watching this game cast, and she spoiled the fun. I thought she was calling. I thought I was kind of seeing it live. Like, I thought it was like she was calling me to, we were going to watch the kick together.
Yeah.
She just spoiled it a second I got on the phone. That's what you get out of these games. Well, Jerry Palm's going to help us break down what we're going to see in week 3 coming up next in some of these games. And also some of the other thoughts like Clay Helton getting fired at USC. Those things and more coming up next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We'll be right back.
on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we're doing 1980s drama themes because of Miami Vice's debut on this date in 1984 on Throwback Thursday. All right, let's go to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive, this is L.A. law, by the way. Let's go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Jerry Palm joins us from CBS Sports to talk about college football going into week number three. How are you, Jerry?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I want to hear your thoughts on Clay Helton getting fired from USC. I got to believe it's a little more than just losing to Stanford. What did you make of that decision?
Well, I just think that was the final straw. You know, the USC just isn't what USC needs to be. He's been on the hot seat for 3 years,
right,
and if not for a good season last year during the pandemic, he may have already been gone. It was really just a matter of time, and I just think that was, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back finally for Clay Helton.
It's still USC. It's still Los Angeles. It's still got a great recruiting area. Is it still one of the chop jobs in college football?
It is, because of what you just mentioned. You know, you're in very fertile recruiting ground. You've got a program with a great history, although not so much recent history, at least not in terms of being nationally relevant. I don't know that their program is in as bad a shape in terms of trying to go back to their glory days as, say, Nebraska or Tennessee or Texas even. USC, I think, is in better shape than that. They can get back to to national prominence quicker than any of those other programs, but they need to get the right guy this time. This needs to be the right hire.
All right, before we get to some of the games this weekend, let's talk about a game that happened last weekend. Oregon going on the road and upsetting Ohio State. We didn't get a lot of Pac-12 football last year to sort of process. How surprised were you of this, and what does it mean for Ohio State?
Well, you're always surprised when Ohio State loses at home, because it hardly ever happens. It was certainly Ohio State's defense had shown chinks in the armor against Minnesota, but you don't want to overreact because it's game one. Now it's time to start overreacting. Ohio State's defense is a problem. Their offense put up a lot of yards but couldn't finish drives, and that's why they're in this situation. So for Ohio State, what does it mean? It means that they don't control their own fate anymore with regard to the playoff. Same as Clemson. You know, if Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma and Oregon, you know, win all their games, you know, and the Alabama and Georgia then face each other as undefeated teams in an SEC championship game, those are your four playoff teams. And there isn't anything Ohio State can do about it right now. But they have bigger problems because, you know, they've got games that are going to challenge them if they don't get their defense fixed, like Penn State. If they get by them, possibly a conference championship game. You know, Ohio State's path to 12-1 is not going to be easy unless they get their defense fixed.
Georgia, the number two team in the nation, taking on South Carolina. You know, this JT Daniels was hurt and Stetson Bennett came in. What do we know about JT Daniels' injury? How would it affect the Bulldogs if he's out for a period of time?
Well, Bennett's played before. I think they're okay. Their defense is going to keep them in every game anyway.
Right.
They've got one of the best defenses in the country. They didn't, you know, that UAB team they just throttled, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
They're one of the favorites in Conference USA, and they just got skunked. So I'm not worried about Georgia long-term at the quarterback position. I think whoever they run out there is going to be good enough to win most games. I don't know if they've got a quarterback good enough to beat Alabama, and that's the one that really matters, but I think they're okay otherwise.
Florida taking on Alabama. Alabama hasn't been to Gainesville in a while, about 10 years. Florida, though, is working this two-quarterback thing. I always get nervous when schools do this. It may not be enough to beat Alabama, but does Dan Mullen want to use this kind of thing all year?
I would think not. I would think at some point he'd want to settle on somebody and just go with that. Otherwise, your offense becomes too predictable because you'll have a package of plays for each guy, and it's easier to scout. So I think you really want to have just, you know, one quarterback that can run the offense and that you can count on to do that and just take advantage of that guy's skills in particular. I don't think two quarterbacks is a great long-term solution. I've heard several coaches, I remember Joe Tiller saying this, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have any.
Yeah. In terms of the Gators, and again, I don't think they'll beat Alabama, but they're winning, but it doesn't feel easy.
No, I agree. I mean, Florida's a good team, but I don't think they're good enough to beat Alabama. I don't think they're good enough yet to beat Georgia. But they're the maybe fourth or fifth best team in a pretty good SEC, and that's a good team. That's possibly a New Year's Six game kind of team, but not quite at that next level yet.
One of the games from last week was Arkansas winning against Texas and really winning against Texas, and now that has propelled them into the top 25. You can make of that what you want, but that is still a notable move by Arkansas. Are you buying that as a result of that win against Texas?
I think Arkansas is pretty good. They've got some nice momentum going. They're in the tougher division in the SEC. They're going to have a hard time finishing better than, say, fourth in that division. But it's still momentum in the right direction for Sam Pittman and his team. And that's what they're doing. They're building to try and get to the point where they're pretty competitive in this league. And that win over Texas sends a message to the rest of the league, but also to his own team, that they might be capable of being pretty competitive in this league. Whether they can stay in the top 25 all season long remains to be seen, but you better show up to play Arkansas.
And also, it's Steve Sarkisian, so there's a new face at Texas, but that loss seemed to remind people that we seem to be doing this with Texas. We love them, and then they do something, and we go, yeah, same old Texas.
Yeah. Well, we're two games in, so they've been both, right?
Right.
They've been really good. I mean, they dominated seems to be a pretty good Louisiana team, or at least we thought so.
Sure.
And then they got smoked at Arkansas. So it's, we'll have to wait and find out what Texas really is. But they're probably still looking up at Oklahoma in the Big 12. And I think this just kind of shows you how it's not going to be all that easy for Texas to get back to their glory days once they're playing SEC teams every week.
Let's go out west for those of us who live in a time zone where this would be a late Saturday game, Arizona State against BYU. How much meat is on this bone, Jerry?
Well, BYU got a nice win over Utah. It's a pretty good team, and they're obviously their rival, and that was at home. And I think this one's at home as well. Arizona State, probably a team of similar quality. I think it's an important game for the Pac-12. Because they took a beating again last week, even though Oregon won. And that was huge, not just for Oregon, but for the league. It gives them a legitimate playoff contender. But USC lost. Washington lost again. Yeah, the rest of the league isn't really stepping up. And Utah, of course, lost. So, Arizona State needs this win, obviously for their own, purposes and trying to get into a good bowl game or maybe even a New Year's Six game, but they need to, they need to win this game, and the league needs Arizona State to win this game.
All right, now we go to the one that I'm really, really interested in, and that is Auburn against Penn State. I know Auburn hasn't done much with, other than throttle Akron and Alabama State, but they found what they do. What do you think about this game in terms of how matched up these two teams are?
Well, they're not going to score 60 on Penn State.
Right.
Penn State's defense is really good. This is an interesting game. Auburn doesn't play games like this very often. I mean, they don't go north very often. They went to Syracuse, I guess, in 2001 was the last time they were this far north. They hardly ever leave the Southeast. I mean, you could count on one hand with fingers spare how many times they've left the Southeast in the last 20 years for a regular season game. So it's interesting. It's a whiteout game for Penn State. I don't think obviously Auburn's played in front of huge crowds, so they're not going to be intimidated playing it at Penn State. But I think it's just a really good matchup between a high-powered offense and a really good defense. And I like Penn State. I don't know if they'll cover a touchdown. That seems like a lot. But I think Penn State wins because I think they'll dictate style.
Excellent. Jerry, great talking to you as always. We'll catch you next week, my friend.
All right, thanks.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, joins us every Thursday to talk some college football, and he's on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Oh, I did forget to ask him about Oklahoma, Nebraska coming up this weekend. I was so excited about Auburn, Penn State. I do think that I love this atmosphere. I looked this up in their game notes, right? Because I was like, Jerry, I was like, when does Auburn leave the South for these games? And Auburn, this is only the third time in the school's history that it has played a Pac-10 opponent at their house, and the first time they have done so since 1931 when they played Wisconsin. So his point about Auburn not leaving the southeastern part of the United States for games is true. Yeah, they may play teams that come to them, or they may play neutral site games or whatever, but they don't go to Wisconsin. They don't go to Ohio State. They don't go to Penn State. They just don't. And this is the first time they've gone to a Pac-10 house since 1931 to play a college football game. I remember Georgia years ago went to Colorado to play, because I was in Colorado at the time when Georgia came. And it was like a big deal that this was like the first time in 70 years or something that they had crossed the Mississippi River to play a game during their non-conference schedule. Florida is the same way. Florida, I can't think of a game that they've played in the month of September in their non-conference slate that is outside the state. Right? They may go on the road, but they're going on the road in state. They may play Miami. Like last week they played South Florida. But they're not in September. Florida's not going to play like Ohio State, right? They're not going to play, you know, Michigan. That's not happening. And some schools are just locked into that. And so kudos for these schools to book it, especially in a Penn State. It's a dangerous game because Auburn is an SEC school, and they have SEC level players, and they can beat you if you're not careful. Now, Penn State will get a boost if they win. But it's also dangerous for them because if they lose, they're like Ohio State. You can't lose again if you want to keep yourself alive for the postseason, you know, for the potential four-slot playoff. You know, when you got Clemson sniffing around with one loss, and then you got, you know, a bunch of these other teams that might have one loss in the end, you better not get two. And you can get two if you lose to Auburn, and you still got to play a tough conference slate coming up. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, as we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
It's our Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. We're doing TV themes of the 80s, TV drama themes of the 80s, because it's the anniversary of Miami Vice getting on NBC.
Yep.
So this is Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, it is.
With Angela Lansbury. And this relates to sports.
Yep.
Because Pat Summerall, this is what he used to say. Coming up next, 60 Minutes, followed by Murder, She Wrote. That was Pat Summerall's big line.
The whole reason why I included it, too.
Well, he was closing out games on CBS on those cold, frigid nights in New York. So, there you go.
Except on the West Coast.
Except on the West Coast. What were you getting? Your local news?
Pretty much, yeah.
You weren't getting more football.
No, you didn't get more football. You either got the news or, you know, whatever.
It really didn't matter. You just got nothing.
There's like sometimes there's like a slapstick show on.
Yeah.
You know, pets doing stupid tricks or whatever. I don't know.
Right. So, yeah, we jumped right into, back in the old days, we jumped right from Giants Bears from Soldier Field right to Maury Safer interviewing Yasser Arafat in Palestine. Like that's what we jumped right into. We jumped into football to major world events, right? We would jump from CBS's last game to tick, 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 tick. Are we close to nuclear war? Tick, 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 tick. Find out from a general who knows more than he should next on 60 Minutes. And I'm a kid watching this go, okay. Should I? Please, when's Murder, She Wrote coming on?
Yep. Never got any of that. Not where we are at.
I don't think I've watched one episode of Murder, She Wrote from start to finish.
I think I'm with you.
Wasn't really my show when I was a kid, and then it definitely wasn't one of my shows. It's like Matlock. It's like a show for older people.
Yeah.
Like, they love Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, well, my grandparents, Matlock. My grandfather loved it.
Oh, yeah.
It was smart drama.
They love those shows. But as a kid,
I described it.
It's like an elderly woman who writes novels solving crimes. Eh, I'm not into that.
Well, what was it, a town called Cabot Cove or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Why would you ever go there?
We're doing throwback. I know it was all these crimes. It drives me nuts. We've been doing these dramas in the 80s, and there were so many shows that were just people solving crimes.
That's all it is.
And it didn't matter what profession they were in. I kid you not. Look this up. Look this up. There was a television show that ABC had called Lottery. I think it lasted one season. And it was about a guy who would travel with an IRS agent to deliver the lottery winnings to people. But whenever they went somewhere to drop off the lottery winnings, with the IRS agent would be there to make sure all the papers were filled out, something would happen and they would have to figure out how to get out of this predicament that was involving some shenanigan and crime. Like, they created drama out of everything in the 1980s. It doesn't matter. How many private eyes were there? Like, I didn't know you could do that as a job, just be a private investigator. And some private investigators were rich. There was a show called Matt Houston. He was wealthy and somehow was bored being wealthy and just solved crimes. I don't know how the people did it.
I'm looking at the lottery right now. Starred Ben Murphy, Marshall Colt.
Yeah.
Lasted 17 episodes.
Exactly. They didn't even make it a full season. What's a full season? 20?
Probably.
25?
Yeah.
They didn't even make it a full season.
I don't even know why.
I don't even know why I remembered that show. Maybe even at a young age. What year was it on?
'83.
Yeah.
Yeah. Started in '83. Ended in '84.
I wasn't old enough to really process this, but I probably remember it because we didn't have cable, and it was probably left on because it came after Webster or something like that. In my house, nobody wanted to get up to change the channel, so we watched whatever the best reception from the antenna got, and that usually was Channel 9 out of Manchester. So if it was garbage, but it was on Channel 9, my family probably watched it. All right, we continue with Wake Up Call.